Welcome to Breakfast Conversations. This is the podcast where we sit down one-to-one with amazing educators from around the world. This season is dedicated to Apple distinguished educators from the class of 2019. Your host, Jacob E. Hansen, is sitting at his coffee table alone, but let's see who will join him today. I'm sure that they would be talking about education. He always does. He wants school to become the learning spaces that kids like me deserve. As the clever kid that I am, I have put up some microphones, so let's sit down over here so that we can listen to their conversations. Now, relax and enjoy.
While my son made this beautiful introduction for me, I made myself a cup of cappuccino. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to you Jacob Woolcock from Cornwall. He is a very, very wonderful teacher and a new friend of mine that I met at the ADE Institute a couple of weeks ago. As a teacher, Jacob truly cares about his local community and about how the kids in his classroom can become connected with school kids from all around the world. And now let's jump into our conversation with Jacob Woolcock from Cornwall.
Jacob, I'm really glad that you want to sit down with me this morning and have a little breakfast conversation once again.
Good morning. Good morning, Jacob.
We met for the first time a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week or two, at the ADE Institute in Amsterdam. And we actually had some fantastic conversations, and I'm really glad that you want to have another conversation with me this morning. And we have been Twitter friends, I think, for some time, but the ADE Institute in Amsterdam was our first opportunity to actually meet in person, and that was actually a very wonderful meeting.
Yes, it was fabulous to actually get to put a face to that name on Twitter and meet you in real life. And it was really lovely to kind of learn about your background and what you do and what brought you to Amsterdam. And I think it's been fascinating having those conversations with people, hasn't it? And learning what journey they've had to get to that institute and where they're heading next as well.
Yeah, and totally selfish. I just want to keep on having those great conversations with
yes,
the new
yes.
class and learn more about all of you. And I'm very happy that you want to be one of the first to jump into those conversations now.
Absolutely, it's very exciting. And like you say, you really do want to keep that dialogue going and keep those connections strong after the Institute. I'd hate to think that it would just kind of fade away and be that one experience in isolation. I think it needs to run through everything that we do from now on and continue to push ourselves forwards using that and those connections.
I think for most ADEs, the first institute is just the beginning of an amazing journey.
Mm, absolutely.
But all of you have already had an amazing journey to this point where you've become an ADE, so I'd love to hear more about it. But let's start.
Yes,
are you a coffee drinker or tea?
Big time coffee. Big time on the coffee. Especially at breakfast time. You need a couple of good mugs of coffee to get going, I feel.
So no English breakfast tea for you. You are a coffee person.
No, my partner's a big tea drinker and she always tries to get me involved in drinking tea, but I just don't get the appeal of it myself. And as a British person, that's probably quite terrible.
Yeah.
I'm much more of a coffee drinker. I think when I drink tea, I like to put so much sugar in it that it doesn't really taste like tea anymore. So it doesn't seem worth it.
And I try actually to drink a bit more tea than I used to. I'm also
yes.
a big coffee drinker and love my espresso machine. But I try to, at least in the end of the day, to drink tea instead now, but have to get used to it. So
maybe I'll get used to that in time.
Yeah. Maybe it's something that we can grow into. But tell me a bit more about your breakfast habits here, because now it's actually early morning.
It is early morning. I've got to be honest, I'm feeling a little bit sad this morning, Jacob, because I've got my cup of coffee, I'm ready to go. And since I've come back from the Netherlands, I've been having a stroopwafel each morning of my coffee. I bought a whole load at the airport.
Ah.
In fact, I probably bought too many stroopwafels, if I'm honest. But I've realised I'm on my last one today, so I feel a little bit sad that I've now run out of stroopwafels. So if anyone listening wants to send some stroopwafels down to Cornwall, I would be most grateful.
So now it's back to your normal schedule, both
your
work life and soon and breakfast-wise.
Yeah, no, normally it's a bowl of cereal and a coffee and then just watch the news kind of thing in the morning. Mm. A nice gentle start to the day. But I do find the mornings are a really nice time to get myself prepared for going into work and for getting all my lessons ready and just knowing where I'm going with the day. And I like having that time before I get in the car and drive just to get everything planned in my head and get all my resources ready.
So you are actually a morning person, that is.
Yeah, shockingly, I think I am. Yeah. I think up until recently, I would have said I'm very much not a morning person, but I've kind of made a way of finding, you know, found a way of using that time now and hopefully getting the most out of it. And I'm enjoying that early morning start now.
Yeah.
So I tend to wake up about 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And I don't have to go to work till about 7:45 normally. So I have a few hours to get stuff ready, which is nice.
I normally
get woken up by the cat, who's very hungry in the mornings. Okay. And who'd quite like to jump on my face and go meow and wake me up that way. That's my alarm clock.
Fantastic. Yesterday I needed to make a bit of research and look where your school actually is in the country see a bit about Cornwall.
Yes,
I've been in the UK often. I must say in London often, because that's for me, the UK we have.
That is the UK.
Nearly 90% of my travels to the UK has been to London. So,
of course.
And I've never been in your part of the country, and I must admit, it looks beautiful. But I think a lot of our the two listeners that we maybe have, or the mothers, they don't know how it looks like. If I transformed myself into a little mouse and jumped onto your shoulder, and were going along with you next Monday. From your home until to a school, can you tell us a bit about what would I see? What would I? What does your way to school look like? How does your school look like at your work day?
Of course. So, like you said, I live in Cornwall, which is right down at the southwest corner of the United Kingdom. And Cornwall's not a massively built up area. There's a lot of open space and plants and fresh air and all the nice kind of greenery that you like in the countryside. My drive to work is only about 10 minutes. It's not far, and it's not down like big motorways. It's just a little country road, really. And I go right past the beach on the way to work, which is lovely. One of the best parts of Cornwall is the fact that we're surrounded on all sides by the ocean and by beaches. So it's very, very coastal. Lots of that nice, like, fresh sea air that comes in. So I get a very pleasant drive to work in the morning. And my school's in a town called Hale. Now, Hale used to be quite an industrial town a few hundred years ago. In fact, it was one of the areas in Cornwall where the steam engine was first invented. So it's got a lot of history to it. Nowadays, not industrial at all, but it's quite a nice little seaside town. It's quite popular with tourists, and the locals seem pretty happy to be there, I would think. It's a nice little seaside town with lots of Cornish pasty shops and lots of fish and chip shops and, that sort of thing. And my school is a primary school. It's called Penpole Primary School. And it's actually a Victorian building. So we celebrated our 100th birthday, I think it was 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. So it's quite an old building, and it started out being just four classes. And over the last 100 years, more recently in the last 10 or 20 years, it's grown, and we've had classrooms kind of added on at every opportunity. So it's a bit like a maze now. And I think if you walked into the school for the first time, you'd think, what on earth were the planners thinking designing a school with this layout? But in reality, it's been many decades of growth and expansion and new classrooms dotted on all over the place. So I think we have about 380, maybe 390 children now. So we're quite a big school. I actually went there as a pupil when I was young. And back then it was 290 children, so it's grown by about 100 children in the last 10 or 15 years.
So that must also be interesting to actually work at the same school where you have been yourself as a kid.
Yeah, I tell you, at first it was weird because I found it very strange becoming an adult in the same school where the teachers who taught me still worked.
Yeah.
So even though I didn't initially start as a teacher, I was still there in that capacity as an adult.
Yeah.
And I think probably 7 or 8 teachers that taught me as a child were still there working.
Ah, okay.
So that was a really weird feeling for me, trying to think, actually, I'm an adult now. I can talk to these people like adults. Yeah. I haven't got to call you sir or miss, you know. But I think a good icebreaker, on my first week there, we had first aid training.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up in a pair with the head teacher, who was the head teacher when I was a child. And within about 10 minutes on my first day there, I was doing pretend CPR on him.
Okay.
And that kind of broke down the barriers because I was terrified.
Yeah. And I must admit, it really looks beautiful. And you are part of the country. And I was looking yesterday at this. Looks like something that is really worth visiting.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think tourism is kind of our main business down here.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of people from all around the world that come and visit. When I was in the Netherlands at the Institute, I would say to people that I'm from Cornwall.
Mm.
And maybe 1 out of every 3 people said, oh, I've been to Cornwall as a child. I went on holiday there and I've been to this part of Cornwall. So
yeah.
I was surprised how many people had kind of been here before. And I think that's lovely because it is a nice place to come and visit. I think living here, you take it for granted sometimes.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're no more than 10 minutes from the nearest beach at any time, really, which is lovely.
Yeah, coming from Denmark, I also really enjoy having the ocean close to me all the time.
Yeah.
It would be hard for me to imagine living somewhere where I couldn't reach a beach.
There's something very calming, isn't there, about being able to walk by the ocean.
Yeah.
And I think when you go to a big city like London, we actually spent a week in London last week. I came back and I really missed that ocean and that open, clean air. That was the first place I went when I came back, was just down to the beach for half an hour.
Yeah. Oh, I did a bit of the same after. Jacob, why did you end up in education? What is your big why for ending up in this business?
I tell you what, I would love to have a really noble and inspirational reason, but I don't. When I left college, I was kind of a bit unsure of where to go and what to do. And I was looking at going to university, but I didn't really want to travel upcountry to do that. So I kind of found myself in a bit of a uncertain position of where to go. And by chance, I had contact with my old head teacher at Penpole. And he said, why don't you come in for a few days of kind of work experience? And I said, well, yeah, that sounds like something I could do. So I actually invited into the school and they asked me to do like an inventory of all their stock and their technology and stuff, just for like a record of what they have for insurance reasons and stuff.
Yeah.
It was quite a boring job that no one else wanted to do, it turns out. But they got me in. They lent me a MacBook to do it on. That was my first time touching an Apple MacBook. That's quite exciting.
Okay.
I went through the school, categorised all the stuff they had and never left. On my last day, after the 3 days experience, the head teacher pulled me into the office and said, look, we really don't want you to leave. We think you're a really talented individual who's got a lot of excitement and passion. And we'd like to see if we can steer that with you to see if you'd like to get into the education world.
So you got a bit tricked into this world.
Yeah, I think I did. Because back then I didn't really have a clear career path that I wanted to follow. I've always struggled to know, I want to do this in 10 years' time. That's not how I kind of view the world.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll see how this goes. So I spent a year and a half there working as an IT technician. In fact, I was a trainee IT technician, working with a very talented chap called John Voog. And he taught me pretty much everything I know about Macs and iMacs and MacBooks. Because back then I really wasn't an Apple person, but the school was fully Apple even then.
Yeah.
So he taught me a lot. And then it came to the kind of time when I thought, I could actually perhaps look at being a teacher. So I ended up over the next 4 years, whilst working there, doing a distance learning degree in teaching and learning followed by a year's teacher training. So it's 4 years in total. And the school offered me a full-time post as a teacher when I'd finished that, which was incredibly lucky, and I'm very, very grateful for that. And I've not left. I've not left since. So I've not, you know, got a noble reason, like, yeah, I want to grow up and be a teacher. It didn't really happen like that. I kind of found myself just, you know, it just happened. But I'm very, very grateful that it did, because I've managed to combine my love of technology and computing and then teaching and making a difference to children's lives and all of that as well, which I think is lovely.
And that's also some of the subjects that you are teaching now, isn't it? Technology and
yeah, computing coding. Yes. So I do teach computing to all of Key Stage 2. So that's year 3, year 4, year 5 and year 6. And because we're a 2-form entry school, that's 8 classes. Okay. So I teach computing and take the children either to the Mac suite or we use the iPads. But I'm also kind of moving into digital learning sphere as well now, where we're using the iPad in the class during a geography lesson or a maths lesson or a history lesson. Okay. And as a school, we're very new to iPads. Well, I say very new, we've had about a year or so. And we've only got...
Was MacBooks before? Or?
It was iMacs before.
Oh, okay.
We have 2 Mac suites, so we have 30 iMacs in each room. So we've been quite an unusual setup, I think, compared to a lot of schools at the moment.
Yeah.
So we had our first iPad trolley last April, and I've been gradually kind of introducing that to the teachers and trying to build their confidence a little bit, because I think for them they found it quite a big change.
Okay.
You know, so we've been gradually working that in, but at the moment I think it's safe to say a lot of the lessons are a case of, you know, okay, let's have a lesson with the iPads today, or a lesson on this app on the iPads today. But I'm trying to kind of steer a little bit towards, okay, we're having a maths lesson today and the iPads are here to help us. Or we're going to do history today and the iPads are there if you want to use them as a tool for research or anything. So rather than having a lesson on the iPads for the sake of it,
yeah,
I think it's important to have a lesson with the iPads as a resource, just like having a dictionary or a calculator might be.
Yeah.
So I think that's what most other schools are doing, and we're trying to steer it that way with the hope of then getting additional iPad trolleys in the future to so further integrate.
The iPad is just becoming a natural tool in the toolbox.
That's exactly it. Exactly it. Yeah. And so I think that's in terms of our school, it's quite a big shift, purely because we've never had technology in the classrooms in that same way. We've always gone to a room to use the IT, you know. So it's a really powerful and really positive change.
Yeah, I think that must give a lot of new opportunities going from a setup where this has always to be indoor and in a certain room with the IMAX, much more stationary.
Yeah.
To a setup where it's much more mobile.
Oh, absolutely. I remember the first class I had the iPads with. We handed them all out and we explained briefly about, you know, not dropping them if you can help it and all of that. And they said, can we go and sit at our tables now and start? And I said, no, we're going to go and sit on the field and do it. And their faces were like, what? What? We can't take these outside, Mr. Walcock. And I said, yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. And that was a really lovely change. Yeah. Because I think in that moment they realised that there was so much possible with that technology.
Yeah. I think when the technology just becomes an extension nearly of our bodies and follows us everywhere.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been a massive iPad fan literally since they first came out.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple kind of in the classrooms for the teachers to use in that time. We've never had a whole set for the children, so it's lovely to have that opportunity now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think when the first iPad came out, I was in the queue to buy it on that first morning. So, yeah, I was very excited back then. Very excited. That was the first Apple product I ever bought, was that first iPad.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Do you still have it?
I do, actually. It doesn't work anymore.
No?
And I think I took it apart to see what was inside when it broke. So it's in pieces, but I do still have it.
That's the right spirit. And I also enjoy it. To do that both with my own kids and previously as with my students.
We like doing it with the children.
To actually show them that what is inside of this little black magic box so that they actually know a bit about.
We build a PC every couple of years of our children. Just because they can, you know, hold the processor and put it in and turn it all on. and we get all the components out and we talk about what they all are.
Ah.
And they're really fascinated by, you know, how big the heatsink is and how big the graphics card was.
Yeah.
And I say to them, look, this computer is, you know, the best part of 10 years old now. That's why we're taking it apart.
Yeah.
And I always get a couple of children that say, so, you know, are computers still this big?
Yeah.
And I just point my Apple Watch on my wrist and say, no, they're not. And when they realise that, you know, the Apple Watch has got a processor, it's got a graphics card, it's got all of the components in, they kind of realise that in 10 years so much can change.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually a really important thing, because in 10 years' time, you know, an Apple Watch is probably going to look massive and outdated.
Yeah.
So I think if they realise that, that's quite powerful.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to get both our pupils and colleagues to reflect on, where will we be in 10 years' time and how can
absolutely.
Use the technology on that journey and how will technology impact our lives. First of all, I would really like to... we have talked a bit beforehand about some other projects that you're really passionate about.
Yes.
And I would love to give you the opportunity to talk a bit about your topic that you're really passionate about.
Yeah, so I think a big part of what I like to try and do is to inspire the children to kind of think, you know what, we can achieve anything we want to. I remember when I was a pupil at that school, I had a really fabulous education and I really loved being at school. And I remember that kind of moving on to secondary, I found things a lot harder and I didn't enjoy the IT side of things so much. And I think I lost a lot of that excitement and that little fire. So I kind of feel like I want to give the children as much excitement and possibility and hope as possible so they can then plan their next steps in a kind of fully informed position.
Mm.
So a big part of that being located in Cornwall is that we're quite geographically isolated from a lot of big cities. Our nearest city is half an hour away, but it's not a big city. It's a very small city by comparison. So our nearest big city is probably an hour and a half or 2 hours away, depending on which way you go. So the children perhaps don't get the same experience that you would do in a bigger part of the country or in a bigger city school. Now, that's not a bad thing, because I think we have a lot of opportunities down here that other children would perhaps love to have, like the beach and like the countryside and not having cars everywhere. But at the same time, it means that the children perhaps don't get to experience, you know, all the different industries or the different career prospects that you might see every day in the city.
Mm.
You know, every time you walk through a busy, bustling city street, you see all the exciting shops and businesses and people professionally dressed walking to places. And your mind kind of thinks, I wonder what they do. I wonder if they're a graphic designer. I wonder if they're a photographer or if they're a business owner. What do they do?
Yeah.
Down here, we don't have that. We don't have that same hustle and bustle, that same excitement level. So I think a really big part of it for me is trying to show the children what opportunities are out there.
Yeah.
So we kind of approach that in different ways. We have a careers fair at our school, where we try and get in a mixture of really unusual careers and businesses in. And we also try and teach the children skills which might help them in one of these careers one day and give them that kind of introduction, if you like.
Yeah.
So I guess a quick example before I come on to my main passion project is a couple of years ago, I managed to convince the head teacher that we really needed to get a 3D printer. Now, at the time when we had this, there weren't many schools in Cornwall that had one, especially not primary schools.
Mm.
And the children had absolutely no idea what it was. In fact, most of the teachers had no idea what it was. And I still catch some of them in there just staring at it sometimes in amazement. But we didn't really know much about it. But through that piece of technology, we learned about 3D design. We learned about architectural design. We learned about modelling and refining and shaping objects in a 3D space. It had massive links to our maths lessons and our science lessons. We designed moon bases to live on the moon. We designed rockets to get you there. And every year since, I've had this brilliant / stupid idea to get every child that I teach to 3D print something to take home every year. Now, I teach 200 children, and 3D printing is very, very, very slow. And we only have one printer. So what we've been doing for the past 2 years, we start in about September time, And we use a program called Tinkercad online. So it's a 3D design program, which is kind of professionally usable, but also accessible for children. And we design a winter ornament or a Christmas decoration, depending on what the child would like to do.
Yeah.
And we give them a couple of constraints, like, you know, we only have these colors available and we can only print it a certain size, otherwise it would take a week to print. But every single child for the past 2 years has designed their own winter ornament. And then we've 3D printed them all, which takes about 3 months. You have to start it in September. And then at the end of term in December, all the children get to take them home and give it as a present to their families or hang it on their bedroom wall or whatever they want to do. Wow. But that process teaches them a huge amount about a potential career. It could be a career in product design or architecture or, you know, 3D space visualization. It could be a lot of things, but they would never have that experience if it wasn't for buying that one piece of technology. And I think a project like that kind of encapsulates what it is that we're trying to do as a school to give these children that potential and those ideas and those little sparks of imagination that might mean one day they want to go into that.
Yeah. And I think that is also a great example that how production actually can come back and also be everywhere now, where we can produce with laser cutters and 3D printers and so on.
Absolutely.
We don't need to have massive factories to start some production. It could also be a business too.
That's a really, really good point.
One-man business with a 3D printer. Yeah.
That is a really good point. And I think the children, they're starting to realize that actually, you know, if you've got an idea, you can achieve it. And anything is possible, even though you're not in a big city environment with all these different businesses, because you can start your own business.
Yeah.
So I think that's it's a really powerful thing. And I think education is all about that. It's giving them the skills they need for their future lives. And alongside all the core subjects, you want to give them that excitement and passion and love of learning, which I think is really good.
And you haven't not only been looking at bigger cities, also in Amsterdam, you made this fantastic project where you mapped out where a lot of the ADEs actually are living and making this Twitter map
so you
could connect. And,
I think I've become known as that tall guy with the map on his iPad. I had an idea on the first evening of the Institute. So I met a lady called Emma at the airport from South Africa, and we were chatting for 20 minutes before I realised, hang on, you're from South Africa. That's amazing. And I think in my head, that was the moment I realised that actually this Institute wasn't just people from the United Kingdom. It was going to be from all around the world.
Yeah.
And I realised how exciting that was and how that was an opportunity that I'd never had before, let alone the children that I teach. They're not going to have an opportunity like that straight away. So I thought it'd be really fun to make a map and get everyone that I spoke to on that map with a little arrow kind of pointing towards where they've come from and where they lived. And I kind of wondered if perhaps I might get 20 people on there if I was lucky. But by the end of the Institute, I had 110 people on my map, and I was just blown away. And I think I look at that now almost daily and think, what an amazing memory that is for me. But also, for me, it shows that I've like stepped outside my comfort zone and I've engaged with these people that I perhaps wouldn't normally feel confident to do. And every single person on that map, I had a meaningful conversation with. It wasn't just a case of throwing an iPad in their face and saying, quick, do this.
Yeah.
I sat down with them. I spoke about where they came from. We shared stories, a bit like the whole breakfast chat. We shared our stories, and during that, they put their face on the iPad. So I look at that now, and I look at every person on there, and I think, wow, I've learned this from you, and I learned that from you, and this person taught me this. And that's become an amazingly motivational thing for me now.
And I think also that shows beautifully why post the intensity of ADE Institute, because we have just so many meaningful conversations.
Absolutely.
And so many people we meet that we would thought, oh, I would love to have even more time to speak with them. And I think Elda from Norway made this beautiful video about how we can be a bit depressed after the
yes.
Institute going back, because it's just so intense and
yeah.
filled with lovely conversations.
I really had a good chat with Elda on the third day of a lunch, and we were chatting about how coding is being introduced to their curriculum and how a lot of their teachers are unsure why this is important. And he asked how my experience was in the UK with coding, And I spent about 10 minutes chatting to him and having a really good conversation. And they said, can I stop you, Jacob? Can I put my phone down and can we do all that again? But I want to record you. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, I don't want to forget this because it's really meaningful.
Yeah.
And I felt that throughout the whole institute, that I wish I could have recorded our conversations with everyone so that I could look back and reflect. So I think my map is a good way for me of doing that in some ways. Yeah.
And for me, and I think your example with your conversation with Elder and speaking about coding, how you teach coding in Norway and in England and so on, I think it, for me, one of the biggest qualities in the AD community is that we are from different countries and have different traditions and ways we teach and so on. And I think having conversations, people from other educational systems also allow me to see the blind spots in my own educational system and reflect on things that I wouldn't do if I hadn't met so many wonderful people from other countries.
Absolutely. That's actually a really big thing that I want to try and get the children to understand this next academic year. And while I was at the Institute, I was chatting to a lot of people about this idea of kind of connecting classrooms. So the issue that we have down in Cornwall is that we are a long way away from other parts of the country and also other parts of the world. We don't have an airport that's particularly close by. And we don't really have great connections to the outside world. I think at the moment, we're kind of in a position as a country where there's a big divide, obviously, in our country. I'm not going to talk too much about that, to be honest, but I do feel like there's a danger of cutting ourselves off from the world. And I think the Institute demonstrated to me how powerful it is when the world actually comes together and shares ideas. So I think it's really exciting to have that opportunity. And again, a lot of the children that I teach perhaps haven't had the opportunity to travel to a different country or to meet people who speak a different language. And they perhaps haven't all had that opportunity. So I'm really, really keen this year to try and find ways of establishing links between countries.
Yeah.
I feel like the world is so connected by the internet. Everyone is connected to everything. You know, your fridge is connected to your phone and you're connected to someone by Skype in a different country. Even right now, we're sat chatting across countries.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a powerful thing, which we need to embrace even more in education and in schools. So I'm really hoping, having made some strong connections this year at the Institute, that we can then connect those classrooms together. So an example will be Sabe, who works in the UAE. We're very keen to try and get a good connection between our two classes by doing video conferencing and sending messages and almost like kind of modern day digital pen pals, I suppose. And we've spoken to people in Switzerland, in Denmark, in South Africa, in Italy, in Spain, in so many places who are all really keen to connect in this way.
Yeah.
And I think what I'm hoping is that the eight classes that I teach, I can try and connect each of those classes to a different classroom somewhere else in the world. So I might have one class that links to Sabe in the UAE. I might have one class that links to Emma or Jane in South Africa. I might have one class that links to Switzerland. But between those classes, we can then perhaps try and collaborate on things online using, like, you know, online collaboration tools. We could perhaps try and do a FaceTime session once a term or something. You could write emails to each other. There are lots of different ways of communicating. And I think it would be a really powerful way for the children to reach out beyond Cornwall, beyond the United Kingdom, and actually experience cultures from all around the world, which I think would be an amazing opportunity.
I think that sounds as such a beautiful project, and I think for young people in, especially, I think it's so important to meet different cultures, and I think meeting different cultures in other countries or from other countries, it's sometimes maybe easier for kids also to understand that they have a different culture, but when you then are meeting people with a different culture or different ideas in your own local community, it's sometimes easier to value those and embrace those when you have had international connections and then already embraced the value of different cultures on a global level. Actually easier to also embrace the value of it in your local
Community. Absolutely. There's a saying that I can't remember when I first heard it, but I use it a lot as my mantra. And it's the saying that you don't know what you don't know. And I feel like the children, if they don't know what it's like in the Netherlands or in Dubai or in Switzerland, they're never going to know unless they find out. And they don't know they're missing out on that. So you don't know that you're missing out on it until you have an opportunity to learn it. And that's when a new doorway opens. That's when your horizons expand. And that's when you can see beyond your kind of bubble of knowledge that you have already. And I think there are a lot of people that perhaps don't have that opportunity. And I think it's such a powerful thing to experience. And for me, going to institute, as someone who hasn't traveled a huge amount in the past, but who does enjoy traveling, meeting all those people, it's so inspiring. It is so, so inspiring. Because I now want to travel to all these different countries to meet up with them, to visit their schools, to learn about their way of life and their culture. And that, I just want to get on a plane and travel now. And it's so inspiring to know that the whole world is out there,
yeah.
And that there's actually nothing stopping you exploring it.
I think it's so wonderful that we both get inspired to travel, but also having those connections, just sometimes also traveling virtually
yes,
Googling how does it actually look like where in the countries yes. where I have connections. How are they actually living?
And the beauty of a connecting classrooms type situation is that it spans the whole curriculum.
Yeah.
You know, you have a really obvious geography connection, but then also you could be looking at the history of their country. You could be looking at the religions in their country. You could be looking at their artwork in their country. And you could be talking to children on just a children next door kind of level. You know, what do you like to do after school? What games do you like to play? There are so many levels to it, and I think that's a really exciting prospect. So that's something I really want to try and get behind this year, definitely.
So I think those kind of connections can definitely spark our curiosity and wanting to know more. But
definitely.
I'm actually very curious also on, want to transition into the next part and hear about your hopes for and thoughts about the future of education. What do you actually think are going to change over the next 10 or 20 years in education? What are your hopes for the future?
Okay. That's a really interesting kind of like thought exercise, isn't it, to think about that. I think the best way I can consider that is to think where I've come from. And, you know, maybe 18 years ago, when I was at school, things were very different to how they are now. And in that time period, a huge amount has changed. But the biggest single change that I can identify is in the technology used in the classrooms. The core subjects, the subject knowledge has evolved. The ways of teaching them has changed slightly. But I think the main change has been the use of technology. So when I was at school in year six, we had our first kind of like computer suite put in. And that opened up a lot of doorways to actually digital learning in that first instance. Fast forward to now, we have tablets that can go into each class, that can go outside. And that makes that learning much more personal and much more unique to each learner. Now, in another 10 or 15 or 20 years' time, there's going to be another paradigm shift in what we use as a tool to help us teach. And teaching itself, I think, is always going to be a massively important profession. And I don't see robots and AI taking the job of a teacher anytime soon. But what I do think teachers are going to adapt to and move along with is that idea of having technology to support the learning. And whether that be through tablets or smart glasses or, who knows, holographic projections of the solar system, I don't know. Whatever it's going to be in the future, we as educators have to embrace that and adapt to that. And I think if we don't embrace that technology, there's a really genuine risk that the children are going to, first of all, not understand it, and secondly, fear it.
Yeah.
And I think if we're going to prepare our children for the world in the future, which no one can predict, we need to embrace the idea that actually there's nothing stopping you learning this. There's nothing stopping you exploring this possibility and embracing it.
Yeah. And I think that's a very beautiful mindset to teach them, that they have to be interested in how technology involves, because I think both of us are living in areas of our countries where there has been big shifts in what kind of industries there are and people getting caught in situations where they have had maybe one type of job and been there for decades, and suddenly things are changing and shifting and lose that job and have to get retrained and find another profession and so on. And I think it's so valuable that we are teaching our kids how to stay agile and how to stay curious and
absolutely
prepare them for a journey of lifelong learning.
I think that phrase, staying curious, is exactly the aspiration that I want to instill in the children. It's that, you know, curiosity of what does this do? How can I make this work? How can I use this to help with what I want to do? And I think we're doing that today. We've done it in the past and we'll keep doing that in the future.
Yeah.
And it's that not being afraid and being confident and, you know, being able to problem solve if something comes along and you don't understand it. Let's try and figure out how we understand it. That love of learning, that self-motivation, that, you know, intrinsic motivation to actually go on and explore and embrace that future. And I think it's important the children realise that we're in a time of great change. You know, I think historians are going to look back on this time period as being a time of massive change technologically and socially. And I think it's important the children realise that we're in the middle of that and that that's a really exciting opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's so many people that are, I think maybe also with good reason, but a bit afraid of it or getting a bit concerned. I think it's so important to stay positive and keep a mindset where we see the all the possibilities and I think it's actually, especially for coming from a more rural area, I think actually the technology can allow us to be connected with the whole world. And
definitely,
and I think that's also why I really love your projects about both about the world map where you connect the ADEs, but also your future projects with connecting your classrooms.
I think it's a really wonderful thing to be able to do. Definitely.
Being a teacher, I think I would like to sum up this episode by giving you the opportunity to give some homework or a challenge to the listeners
definitely.
And telling them what you would like them to maybe spend 15 minutes or 30 minutes on reflecting on and working on.
Okay. So obviously with homework, you wouldn't want to leave it to the last minute. So I'd say get on this as quick as you can. I've got a kind of a challenge, I suppose. I mentioned earlier that we live in Cornwall and that we are trying to connect our classrooms around the world. And I mentioned in passing that Cornwall is surrounded by the oceans and by beaches. Now, our children are very used to going to the beach. It's a 5-minute walk from school. And I think it is safe to say they probably take it for granted in many ways. Now, I know full well, having seen other parts of the world, that there are a lot of children that have never been to the beach or that have never, you know, had that chance to experience what that's like walking in the sea and dipping your toes in. And yet the children I teach do that every week. And that got me thinking that probably where you are, where you're teaching, you have experiences that are commonplace for your children, for you and your staff. Things which maybe you take for granted or which you think, you know what, we're really lucky to have this. Things which other classrooms don't have, which other children don't get to experience. So what I would love to get people to do is to consider something that makes their area, their region unique. Something which they're kind of proud to have or lucky to have, or that they feel like perhaps other people wouldn't have access to. And I'd like to hear about that. I'd like to share that with my class. And in exchange, I'd like my class to share a bit about our lives with you. And I think through that exchange of initial ideas and locations, I think that could be the start of something quite interesting. So I don't have any plans on how we would do this. I don't like setting homework which says you have to do this in this way on this thing and hand it in here. I don't like that. I don't think that's quite creative enough. But what I would like to do is to get you to consider for a moment, like I say, something unique to your area. and maybe do some photos, maybe do a short video, maybe do a clips project. That's a really easy way of sharing things. And send it to me. Send it to me on Twitter or by email. And let's try and share it with the classes. Let's try and build a bond between two different places. And then if we get enough people doing this, we could then build bonds between those places as well. And then perhaps before long, we could start making this amazing community of classrooms around the world where we can share what makes our classroom special, where we can have chats online and talk about why we like this or what we do or how would we feel if this happened, where we can let the children's imaginations run wild and explore, and where we can perhaps start to learn a lot about each other's way of life through that simple initial task of taking one thing locally, which you would like to share with a wide audience.
I think that is a really, really beautiful challenge. And if people want to find you on Twitter, can you share your Twitter handle with us?
Yeah, that would probably be helpful, wouldn't it? My Twitter name is at Jacob Woolcock. So that's JacobWoolcock. And yeah, I'm on there. You'll probably see the big map in my picture. That will be me. And yeah, just send me a message, send me a DM, whatever you want to do. Even if it's just a message saying, you know what, I think I'd like to do this. Let's start talking. You haven't got to send me your finished homework straight away. If you want some advice from the teacher first, hit me up, you know.
And I can definitely recommend people to connect with you. I'm so happy that we met on Twitter some time ago and now also in person in Amsterdam and keeping the connection. And if people are joining this and want to work with this little assignment or challenge, then they can hopefully or share it on Twitter.
Definitely.
And tag you in the post and maybe also give it the hashtag ADE breakfast so that we know that it and we both can enjoy the creative work of our peers.
Definitely. I'm going to get my children to do a short video about our area as well, hopefully quite early on in the term. So we can then start sharing that in return, which would be nice.
Sounds amazing. Jacob, I would like to thank you a lot for your time this morning.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been lovely talking to you.
To drink a cup of coffee together over the distance, and hopefully we will meet soon again, and maybe in Cornwall.
Oh, absolutely. You're welcome anytime.
Okay, that was a nice chat with Jacob Woolcock this morning. I'm aware that it was a long conversation, but I really, really, truly enjoyed it, and I hope that you did too. Every guest will, like Jacob Woolcock, get the opportunity to share a challenge or a big question with you, something that you can work with afterwards. Therefore, there will be released a free companion book to this podcast on Apple Books. The book will grow and get updated and collect all the challenges, and you will be able to see some photos from every guest and from their school. Please connect with Jacob Woolcock and his classroom in Cornwall. Find additional information in the show notes, and if you like to post about this show, please use the hashtag ADEBreakfast. I'm Jacob Espen Hansen, and I have enjoyed this first episode. And I promise you, the next breakfast conversations are with people that are really interesting and that you would like to hear from. The last sip of coffee is definitely cold now, but stay tuned. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Keep on doing amazing things in education. Until next time.